This is Fresh Air. At his briefing earlier this week, General Norman Schwarzkopf used words like classic and extraordinary to describe the coalition's military performance. We asked Sir Michael Howard to put this war in a historical context. Howard is a professor of military and naval history at Yale University. His many books include War and the Liberal Conscience and The Causes of War. He also translated into English the now classic 1831 book On War by the Prussian officer Karl von Clausewitz. I asked him if there had been any other modern war where the casualties had been so disproportionate, with losses so high on one side and so low on the other.
Well, it depends how far you're prepared to go back for modern. But that does come to my mind, the war which the British fought in the Sudan at the end of the 19th century against a very comparable figure, somebody called the Mahdi, who was a charismatic leader of an Islamic society who was trying to overthrow the Western rule which the British had imposed in Egypt. And there we simply slaughtered the Mahdi masses by the use of machine guns, very largely. And the casualties were equally disproportionate, and the circumstances not dissimilar.
Is there an aspect of the Gulf War that you think will be studied in the decades to come?
Well, obviously the military will continue to study it very carefully until there is another war for them to study, to see how weapons performed, what command structures were valid, how tactical and operational doctrine was effective. But because of the weakness of the opposition, we may, I'm afraid, draw rather false conclusions. So when we come up against a really worthwhile enemy, we'll think it's going to be very much easier than it actually is going to be.
I'd like to ask you about air power. As you've pointed out, we've been basically unopposed in a lot of these maneuvers. But what do you think are the new lessons from this war in the use of air power?
Well, I don't know whether there is anything very new, but the old ones were reinforced. And that is, the first thing you have got to do is to destroy the enemy's capacity to interfere with you, to gain what is called, in old-fashioned terms, command of the air. And what we did, in fact, was, well, it was overkill, because we not only made it impossible for him to retaliate during this particular battle, but we obviously degraded, if not entirely destroyed, his capacity to maintain any kind of air cover over his own country, let alone anybody else's, for months, if not years, to come. We in fact, treated Iraq as we had treated Germany in World War II. That simply destroyed it as an industrial complex with any kind of military capability.
Do you think that was an inappropriate way to treat Iraq?
I think that we were not taking any risks. The more risks we took, the heavier our casualties were going to be, and the longer the war would go on. If there was a fault, it was a fault very much on the right side. It was, I think, a deliberate decision on the part of General Powell and the Allied High Command that we were not going to do what the Americans had done in Vietnam, which was to go on putting in always just too little, as a result prolonging the war and having not only taking heavier casualties ourselves, but probably sort of causing heavier losses ultimately to the adversary.
General Schwarzkopf has said that he didn't want to give body counts. He didn't want to always be giving casualty figures of the other side. What do you think his reasons were for that?
Well, I think that, again, to go back to Vietnam, the American High Command got into its head that what they were really concerned to do was killing gooks, killing Vietnamese, and that the more of them they killed, the better they were winning. The only way in which they could show they were winning was by body counts. Well, by any standard, ethical or military, that is a pretty miserable way of deciding whether you are or are not winning. To sort of stand on a heap of corpses and say, look how great we are, is not exactly a civilized way of carrying on. And I think that the General Schwarzkopf was behaving like a thoroughly civilized man when he said that.
The last time we spoke, you said, and I think I have this accurate, that you didn't think the military should deceive the press, that they might need to withhold information, but when they gave information, it should be accurate.
Yes.
Yes. Now, General Schwarzkopf said in that big briefing that he gave a couple of days ago that deception was a key weapon in compensating for the Iraqis' numerical advantage in the ground war, and they really wanted to deceive the Iraqis into thinking there was going to be a big amphibious landing on Kuwait. And Schwarzkopf said, many of you recall the number of amphibious rehearsals we had that was written about extensively for many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that led a lot of us to think that, you know, the press was intentionally invited to these amphibious rehearsals so that they'd write about it and the articles would be part of the deception campaign.
Mm-hmm.
If that was so, what do you think of that?
Well, there were amphibious rehearsals and the press were invited to attend them. If the press then drew the conclusion that there was going to be an amphibious attack, that was their business. They cannot blame the military for that if they care to undertake that kind of speculation.
The last time we spoke, I quoted something from Clausewitz and asked you to respond to it. The quote was, "The fact that a bloody slaughter is a horrifying act must make us take war more seriously, but not provide an excuse for gradually blunting our swords in the name of humanity."
Mm-hmm.
Sooner or later, someone will come along with a sharp sword and hack off our arms.
Yes.
I want to ask you about the opposite now. This was, after all, a war in which the coalition forces had astonishingly low casualties. And I'm wondering if you're concerned about the opposite, that this low number of casualties will give us a false view of war.
Well, in the first place, you must remember that we didn't take many casualties, but we inflicted a very bloody slaughter indeed, and that at the present estimates, something between 50 and 100,000 Iraqi troops were killed. Now, if that isn't a bloody slaughter, God knows what is. So it's not simply a matter of being prepared to accept casualties. It's a matter of being prepared, if necessary, to inflict them. Secondly, we did not know until we went in whether or not we were going to have to take large casualties. And we took the risk that we would have to. Thank heavens they did not actually happen. They did not happen very largely because of the overwhelming firepower which we brought to bear, and especially air power, which really stunned, if they didn't actually kill and destroy, the defenders, who were then in no position to resist us when we came in. So it was the risk of taking them, those casualties, however, was something which weighed very heavily indeed upon our commanders. They quite rightly, from our point of view, determined that they would minimize casualties to our side by maximizing those to the other. And that, I'm afraid, is what does happen in war. And in future, we will obviously always do the same. We will do the best that we can to spare our own people suffering. But it can only come about through inflicting very, very hardships on those who are rash enough to fight us. Then whether we will be more willing to go to war in the future, I think that our morale, and especially if I may say so, that of the United States will be that much higher. It is a little like the British after the Falkland Islands. It was a shot in the arm to know that we can produce armies which can produce that kind of success. Whether or not it will make us more militaristic and gung-ho is an open question. I honestly don't think it will. When one recalls the enormous problems which there were in this country about gearing ourselves up for war or gearing yourselves up for war, when one remembers the problems and the sadness and the tension of the separation of families, this will not be forgotten, I think. What I hope will be remembered is that when military expeditions have to be mounted, it can be done, and if they're well commanded, it'll be successful. But I think it will also be remembered that it does require an enormous amount of wrenching effort to do it.
Sir Michael Howard is a professor of military and naval history at Yale University. This is Fresh Air.